welcome to another episode of our In the Paddock interview series. This is episode 4, and this time we have with us Jeremiah Johnson, the head organizer of the Southern Ohio Forest Rally. SOFR, as it's more conveniently known, ran just a month ago with great fanfare, and we're going to talk to Jeremiah about how an American Rally classic was reborn. Welcome, Jeremiah Johnson. So awesome to have you on the show, on this humble little podcast that we have here. You know, we love interviewing everybody from drivers to organizers, those people behind the scenes that really make these rallies happen. You know, one thing that is our favorite to get to know about new people when they come on, though, is how did it all start for you?
Yeah, hey, I appreciate you guys reaching out. This is great getting to talk about the event. We're completely humbled by the event in general. So just getting to talk a little more about it, it's a great opportunity. So for me, my family, I was born and raised in Chillicothe, and we were very fortunate to have the Sunriser 400 in our backyard. My family got involved with it at a very young age, and I was even more fortunate to be able to experience people like John Buffum running through the forest at night with a 5-cylinder turbo. So you can imagine as a kid, you getting to experience that, how you would get hooked. That impression just stays with me. And that's my drive for rally right there. I mean, just continue to just push on because I think it's just that awesome.
Do you have a specific memory from like a first rally that you're at there, of him going by, like you're at a certain corner and you just heard that thing screaming by?
Yeah. So the Sunriser, as they used to run some of the roads that we ran down here, they ran clear through the night, which was how it got the name. I don't remember what forest, but we were allowed to stay up late that night. Right. So we're really young and it's pitch black out. And all of a sudden you hear this just, you know, overwhelming the Audi turbo, you know, coming through the forest. You can't see any lights. And all of a sudden you see some lights flicking back and forth. And then here he comes, exhaust, rotors blowing, everything. And like I said, that was the defining moment for me where I was like, I will grow up and I will drive a rally car someday.
That is awesome. And, you know, I think that's a lot of people, that's kind of their, if they had that early experience of whether it's a modern car today or some of those classics, granted the classics sounded awesome. they have a certain note to them that, yeah, just can't really be compared for sure. So tell us a little bit about Sunriser and how that began. You said your family was involved with it early on. So this is kind of a reboot, but slightly different. So Sunriser obviously was part of the old SCCA Pro Rally series. What was its beginnings, and how did you transition into what is now SOFR?
So that's a really long story. So we'll give the cliff notes. So Dick Paddock, who's unfortunately passed away, started running the Sunriser in 73, ran through 96, and due to some circumstances, the event canceled and went away. It was years after that. We had thought that rally was dead in the United States because, you know, we're a little town, Chillicothe, and we didn't get out much. So I had stumbled across STPR in 07, 08. My brother and I went to the event. We were completely blown away by how awesome rally was, and we had no idea that it was going on. I mean, so we were just shocked and felt foolish that we had deprived ourselves of rally that long. So 08, 09, I had reached out to Dick Paddock and asked him if we could reboot the event. And it kind of trickled down from there. Kind of leads into another, you know, segment of that. But we started getting people that were organizing back, you know, in the late 90s together from the old event. We met very regularly, once a month, if not twice a month. And unfortunately, we just weren't able to come to an agreement with the state. We use state forest roads, as a lot of rallies do, and unfortunately, we couldn't come to an agreement on those. on those roads and the road permits.
I noticed when on a couple of rallies that I've been on in the past, it's like people who like live around the direct area, some of them aren't particularly pleased that we're tearing down their forest roads and making a lot of noise. It's the NIMBY sort of attitude, not in my backyard. I mean, that comes around a lot, How did you cope with that? Did you have a problem with that kind of attitude from the local people initially?
No, we did not actually. There were maybe three people, and as soon as we explained it, what we were trying to actually do, because when you just say a rally, I can't tell you how many times I went to people looking for sponsorship or looking to just make sure they were on board with what we were doing. We met with forestry department, who again we worked with very closely, the local law enforcement, city councils, and as soon as you say, "Hey, we're doing a rally," they say, "Oh, like Republican rally, Democratic rally?" Oh, no, sir, no, we stay away from that.
Wrong
So
definition.
exactly. So we started, you have to get it out there, and then once you say we're going to run cars potentially 100 mile an hour down a gravel road, they look at you with their mouth open like you're nuts, right?
Well,
And
that's
out of
true.
all the people that well, absolutely, it is true, right? Which is the question on why we do this again, because of the adrenaline rush. And there were a few people that were concerned about it. And then again, once we explained it and told them what type of local impact that it had, they were all on board. Every one of them, just, again, there was only two or three. Pat Morrow, who was, a huge asset to our team, actually went and knocked on every single door that surrounded each stage that we went on, and actually talked to them. So to
Wow.
have that, yeah, absolutely. I mean, he went out, left at like 8 o'clock in the morning, and got home at like 10 o'clock that night, and he said it was totally worth it. The feedback he got, people were excited. We had people setting up lawn chairs in their yards to watch. I mean, it was the local support was overwhelming. We're very, very fortunate that we have such a rich history, and people did remember it, and they had good memories of it.
Yeah, that was the thing that amazed me. It's like we would pull up at the gas station and fill the car up with gas, and the person at the gas pump across from us would stop and talk to us and want to know what we were thinking about everything. And even when we got into like the park areas in Chillicothe and where's the other place? MacArthur. But
Yeah,
anyway,
MacArthur.
so yeah, but there were so many people there, and that. Everybody just wanted to know about everything. They were absolutely focused on what we thought of the area and how we were enjoying it. They were really proud that we were in the area, experiencing what the roads and the stuff that they take for granted.
That's true. They do. But what we seem to have, and I don't get to the smaller communities a lot, but what we have here in our area is people are they do want you to like our town. They're very passionate about it, and that's a fortunate thing for us, because when people come to town, I did not personally hear any negative stories about how anybody was treated. I'm sure there could have been one or two, but in general, all the feedback I got was, "Wow, the rally people are so nice. Like, we wish that you would bring them to town more often," is what we got. And from the rally folks, that's pretty much what we heard was, "Man, your local people, they're just so nice. Like, they're really happy we're here," which made me happy, very happy. We were very excited about that, because that's the unknown, right? You tell everybody you're going to do this event, and you do make it happen. Our team worked really, really hard to make it happen, and we're all sitting there like, "Okay, let's wait on some feedback. Like, is the event going to run on time? Are we going to have somebody show up that's just really unhappy? Is there?" And fortunately, the hard work paid off, and we did not have any of that. So.
That's awesome. One thing that we heard is that you had many previous volunteers from years ago coming out of the woodwork to help out with this event. You kind of said it yourself. You went and talked to some of the previous organizers and people that had worked Sunriser. I guess what was that like? How was it that you were able to get all of these people from, years ago to jump on board? And what I find fascinating about that is when you reboot an event or start an event fresh, getting volunteers that know what they're doing is a challenge. And here you got these veterans that just seem to come from everywhere.
Oh, absolutely. It was not hard. I have a list, the list of people that we were meeting with back in 08 and 09, and most of those people did not go far from Rally. A lot of them, they travel to some NASA events and some Rally America events, and they volunteer there still. They haven't lost the passion. They lost the Rally, right? So they basically, as soon as I made the call and said, "Hey, we're Southern High Force Rally. We got the roads, we're doing this. You tell us where to be and we will be there." And they showed up, and they showed up in large amounts, because without them, I'm confident we would not have been as successful as we were. I mean, there's just no way. 'Cause like you said, come up with, and we did, we had new volunteers too, but we had plenty of very experienced volunteers that could show people how to do their job properly. And the volunteers, my goodness, if you ever stop and think of what we're asking of those people, it's a lot. I mean, the guys and the ladies that were volunteering on Friday for us, they started at around 11 or 12 and finished up at about 1 in the morning. That's a
Wow.
lot. And so, and although we would love to pay our volunteers, as you know, Rally does not have the money to do stuff like that. So it is taking asking a lot. So we were, again, we were so fortunate to have the turnout that we did.
I know that about the volunteers, because my wife was actually captain of MTC on the Friday, and yeah, she didn't get back until after I'd got after. After Bill Marenich and I had got our car garaged in the wee small hours of Saturday mornings.
Well, do we need to go back and review time cards on that, or are we okay on that one? Huh?
Nice.
So one thing that I mean that really grabbed me about this event was how well it was promoted. I mean, you was that what kind of plan did you have there with the promotion? Because I remember the photographs appearing on Facebook, like back in, was it January or February, and those really grabbed my attention, and the guy who I was driving for as well. We decided to enter the rally back then. So how So, why don't you talk a bit about the promotion? Did you have a real plan, or did you have some professional help, perhaps? Because this was really well thought out promotion.
So, well, first off, thank you, because we did put a lot of work in that. And I'll tell you what we have that's a little different is Brent Short, who primarily did 90, he did 90% of all of our social media promotions. He was responsible for a lot of our sponsorship and working with directly with the sponsors. Him and I have been friends since elementary school, so we have a very long history. We've attended a lot of rallies together. He's done local promotion for other events, and he was a perfect fit because he loves rally, and I trust him. And as you probably know, getting people and a core group of friends is what we tried to build. And with Pat Morrow, he started helping back in 09 when I reached out to JB Nyday to actually start doing the event to make it happen. JB introduced Pat and I. We became very good friends, and having him, Brent, and then with the addition of Justin Pritchard, who was the rally master, we're all very good friends, and we worked very closely together. So we had plenty of pool to bounce ideas off of each other. As far as doing all the promotion, like I said, Brent was responsible for 90% of the content and posts and everything else. I could not be happier with the turnout we have. And Brent's very humble about it. He got compliments from other organizers, from other events, and said, "Hey, can we hire you?" You know, joking. And I said, he said, "Man, it just, I didn't really do anything." I said, "You did. People noticed us. We, our numbers, from Facebook and our website and all of the social media numbers, I don't know. I don't have anything to compare them against because it's not really, it's not a race, right? I'm not real worried about who did better, but I was overwhelmed by the amount of feedback that we got online and the analytics that we collected. It was mind blowing.
Yeah, it certainly seems like that, again, from our end, you know, it seemed like it was professionally done. There was a large volume of it. It was consistent. You know, it was always on message, just constantly, you know, giving a little bit more detail, just a little bit more every time to want to be there and want to see it. And it definitely, I think, helped, you know, draw in definitely the crowd there that you guys ended up getting for competitors and fans and whatnot alike. I think we left off, though. You were talking about when you started talking about rebooting it back in 2008, 2009. But it didn't quite happen then. I think we kind of left it. You said you tried to, you know, get permits and stuff like that, and you said it wasn't going to work out. I guess kind of pick up where you left off there, because I think we're missing a little bit of the story.
We did sidetrack from that, didn't we? So what happened was I was obviously a little younger then and wasn't really sure what direction to go. As I mentioned, I reached out to Dick Paddock, and he was, you know, he's getting older, and I started mentoring, so to speak. I didn't really know, obviously, how do you organize a rally? Like, that's not something you just wing, really. I mean, you need a little background. So I started meeting with him very regularly to discuss what he had done and get some game plans together. Once we felt like we had a route, I reached out to Rally America, worked with JB Nide, who was more than excited to help. I mean, he gave me all kinds of feedback. He gave me documents. He gave me everything that we needed to get started. We got farther along with Rally America on planning the event than we did with the state. As I mentioned, we just couldn't come up with an agreement. We worked really, really hard to make that happen. And it basically came down to no. And it wasn't something that they were going to change their mind about. Believe me, we tried. Mm-hmm. We put it on hold. It wasn't something we wanted to give up on, but we put it on hold because it was. I'm sure you know this. It's very, very time consuming, and it takes a lot of energy to do that and money. So again, we put it on hold. My brother and I actually bought rally cars. We competed in a few different events. And we kind of moved on from there, and all the while sitting in the back of our heads, like, man, it'd just be really great. We got great roads here. We really think we could make this happen. And with the formation of the ARA, all of a sudden, 2017, there's some holes in the schedule. And Pat and I discussed making it happen. And I said, you know, I know who to call to see if we can do it. And I worked directly with the chief forester for the state of Ohio, and we discussed it. Road permits came through. We came up with an agreement on how we were going to work through with everything. And Rally America was, you know, very helpful in finalizing all the stuff for us and working with us on dialing in what we needed to do and helping out where they needed to. And it just fell into place. The unfortunate part is when ARA, when they made their announcement, it was late. So obviously we weren't planning on just spinning up a rally, right? So we basically put everything together in about 6 months. So it was, I'm still married, I'll put it that way, but it was a lot of work and meetings and, you know, making sure everybody knew, because you don't want to leave anybody in the dark when you're doing something like this. It's going to affect the local local community in a big way. And I think we did a good job of that, you know, meeting with all the different communities, the Chamber of Commerce and law enforcement, all that good stuff. And here we are talking about how the rally went on. So that was the Cliff Note version.
Yeah, right. You know, one thing you said, you know, obviously you said before that the, you know, talk to the Forest Service before the permits weren't going to happen, and then they did. One thing that I've seemed to have noticed here in the Northwest, whatever, it can vary, depend on who ends up being that manager of that forest at that time, right? I don't know how long their stints are for that job or whatever. But you can have somebody that comes in and they're like super environmentalists, think that you're going to destroy the roads or and destroy the environment, and they're like, no. Then you get somebody in there, it's like, all right, you see you're going to clean up after yourselves. This could be a great way to expose people to the forest that maybe they wouldn't have experienced before, maybe in a different way, but they're going to understand, you know, the way the forests are out here. And it's a different mindset. Is that kind of how that ended up coming to be? It was a different person in there that you were able to contact with versus before?
The short version is yes. So what happened was the managers of the forest are actually the same as they were when we started. I went to them first. I didn't know who to go to back then, and we started the process. They both thought it was a great idea. They said, you're bringing people in the forest. That's what we want. As long as you guys take care of the road, you know, you put the roads back and help us out with that stuff, we're good. We got to the district manager and he was like, wait a second, you're doing rally? I volunteered at the rally. This is awesome. And then we get to the you know, the head of the state and he says, no, it's not going to happen. I'm not sure what his, he would never really come out and say what his conflict with it was. I'm sure he had his reasons. You know, would have been cooler to bring it back earlier, but nonetheless, the local manager was promoted to the chief forester. He's done a tremendous job. And so when, you know, 2017 possibility opened up, I called him and said, can we make it happen? And, you know, then we went backwards, worked with the local guys, and we came up with, we asked them what they needed to make it happen. And we were able to come to an agreement that benefited them directly, and they were happy, and obviously we were happy because we got the roads. And I'll be really honest with you. I don't know if I should say this or not, but we did our volunteers, and the day after the rally, we did such a good job. Even the fans did such a good job cleaning up after themselves. We got our permit. We got our road bond back, our road bond fee.
Nice.
And that's not a normal thing, I don't think. So they were very happy with the way that we, the competitors, everybody conducted themselves. They were very happy with that. So that
was a
really
good thing.
Got to
be good stewards to the areas you're competing in, for sure. And that's awesome to hear from everybody, from the competitors, the volunteers, to the spectators that came out and all that stuff, cleaning up after themselves or making it even better than how they left it. You know, that's a thing that, you know, I wish some of those other forest managers that aren't like the guy that you thankfully, you know, were able to get some help to get that happen. But, you know, it's like a lot of the people involved in rally, they're outdoorsy people. You know, these are the people come out and whatnot. These are the people that are going to enjoy those forests and pay the fees to, you know, pay to park in an area where you can go for a hike or whatever. Right. I see so many outdoorsy people that are rally people. That's one reason why we like rally. You're out in the forest. You're not just in the city center going around a circuit, going around in circles. You are out in the middle of nowhere, and it's something we value. And, yeah, I just wish that they would understand that mindset all across the country. Reviving a rally like this obviously brings back, I think, some of that knowledge to some of those people. So that's definitely a very good thing. One of the unique things, though, about this rally, you had several unique things that you guys did, which really kind of boggled my mind. I mean, like airplane overflights of the rally, all kinds of different ideas you guys came up with. Tell us about some of those and how those came to be.
So that's a good question, because that just goes back to the local support. The the committee that runs the Vinton County Airport, which was where we did service on Friday night, is right outside of MacArthur. The gentleman that there is responsible for running the airport, this one is the privately funded airport instead of like a county airport.
Mm-hmm.
So he's always looking for ways to bring, you know, awareness to their small little airstrip. And he actually reached out to me through our website. He, you know, just simple email, hey, we'd like to get involved. We hear you're going to be in MacArthur. We're close. Something we can do to help you out. We went down and met with him. He's an awesome individual and just basically said, our doors are open for whatever you need. If you want to run service here, if you want to run the cars around the parking lot, whatever you want to do, we'll help do it because we realize what you guys are doing and how much it's going to affect our small little town. We met, about 2 months before the event, and they said, hey, what do you think about doing airplane rides over the stages?
That's just so
and
cool.
In the back of my head, I was thinking, that's like my dream. So, yeah, like you think WRC helicopter, right? And trust me, I did reach out to some locals that had pilot license for helicopters. We just couldn't come up with a four-seater or six-seater helicopter because
man.
Of the cost. But anyhow, that was something that they offered. The funny story, maybe you heard it, but Kiana, she runs one of the two-wheel drive B-spec cars. Her and her team, including her father, had got to go up. They went up on a ride, and they actually got to go over the stage right as Kiana was going through. And so they were totally stoked about that. And they actually, I think there's a YouTube video out there on it where they got to see her. So that was really neat. We were really excited about that.
What other unique things did you end up having as options for spectators out there? It seemed like there are plenty of opportunities.
Oh, yeah. So we tried to one thing we didn't know when we were promoting the event was, one, how many competitors are we going to have? We were not banking on what we got, right? We would have been extremely excited about 30 cars for a first-year event. And we ended up with right at 80 entries. I mean, so we were completely floored. We had the car count, but now how many volunteers do we have? We didn't know. We knew how many people signed up, but hearing some stories from other events, there's a rule of thumb, you know, you got to take a 20% knockoff of how many people signed up. So we weren't sure how many people were going to sign up. Our chief of spectator safety, Jim Tribby, who was involved very heavily in the Sunriser back in the late 90s, he ran the spectator spots. And his idea was, the way the stage is laid out, if we had one spectator spot in a what we considered a good spot, you had the ability to see the cars three times, right? And we thought that worked out well, you know, understanding that spectators like to see multiple spectator spots, but not knowing what we would have to work with, we didn't want to have a bunch of spectator spots and then end up with A, you know, 20 people in the forest, or B, 2,000 people in the forest and not have the volunteers to help manage that.
Right.
So we had the two spots, one each day, and what we felt were really good spots. And we offered food on Friday night. For that, I feel that our service areas were really, really great to go check out the cars. I think they were very welcoming, and we had food on Saturday as well, which again, I know that's pretty common, but it was we wanted to make sure we offered that, because I did go to an event a while back and I struggled to find food. Luckily we brought some Snickers, but we wanted it to be more of a fanfare, right? Like, let's kind of make it a big deal for everything, not just the stage or one aspect of it. Let's just make the whole thing happen and make them feel like they have more to do than just go watch a stage and then go home. And again, I think we did a fairly good job of that. The other thing that you don't see at most rallies was A mud run. I mean, how many rallies have you been to where the cars do a mud run at the end of the night, right? So
I was just going to mention that myself, because that was
yeah,
for me.
totally unintentional.
Yeah, for sure.
Well,
Yeah, that was fun.
had you been there 2 hours before, you would have seen Pat and Mike were actually running the course completely dry. That rain just went through just a mess with us. And it, man, it downpoured for 30 minutes. And one of the competitors walked up to look at the track when he got back, and he said, "Hey, no offense, but man, why'd you water the track so much?" He goes, That's too much." And I said, "Oh man, trust me, we did not do that." So we also had a band playing Saturday night, which again I don't think that's uncommon, but try to, like I said, make it a little bigger deal than just the rally.
Yeah, because that at the fairground was one of the things that really got me. You know, apart from the fact that, you know, when we were there, like you were talking about with the rain, you know, we were there in the regroup, and I got sunburnt, and then, you know, we come back after three or four stages, and it's a quagmire out in the on the fairground there. But the thing that amazed me, and I don't know what you felt, perhaps you can tell us what you felt about this, was when we pulled up in front of the grandstand there, and the grandstand was like full of people come out to watch. I mean, how did that make you feel?
Well, thank you, Brent. We'll give that thanks to Brent for that one, because people on Facebook saw it, and really that's a huge marketplace, right? It's a great way to promote. But I can tell you, I was there with my back to the stands, working on things, making sure things were set up and working with Pat. And I turned around, and there was maybe like 100 people. And I thought, man, that's great. I mean, there's tons. I think the stands hold, I believe they hold around 4,000 people is what the fairgrounds commented. And we go back to work, and you turn around again, and it's like, man, there's got to be at least 200 people here. And the night keeps going on, and finally I turned around, and you couldn't see a hole. I mean, there wasn't a blank seat there. And I was completely beside myself. I just thought, I want to go around and give every single person up there a hug, because, like, thank you for believing in us to put this on, right? And the idea coming across the stage, I thought that was totally great. That was not my idea. I won't take credit for it. But having the cars cross the stage in front of the grandstands gave people a better glimpse of the cars, so they knew what was getting ready to take place. And I really think that the mud slowed things down, right? So we'll just address that. It slowed things down. It drug out a little bit. It happens. But for the most part, I mean, wow, we got to do giveaways. We got to get the t-shirt cannon out. And I really think the fans really enjoyed it. I think they had a blast.
I think the drivers and the co-drivers had a blast there as well.
Well, I tell you, I sure hope I really did. That does mean a lot, because obviously that's the goal. The drivers and the teams, the cars there, those are our clients. That's who we need to make happy, because we want you to come back, right? We want you to come back to the next rally, whenever that might be.
Well, that goes into a next perfect little segue. So, massive success, obviously, beyond I think what you expected for 2017. After the success of this year, I'm guessing you have plans to run it again next year. And if so, is there anything you'd like to see changed, improved? I mean, how do you top 2017?
So I can tell you that the plans for 2018 started about a week after 2017's event was done. We started making phone calls, sending emails, getting things lined up. We don't have unlimited road permits, so we have to readdress those, things like that. I can say that for the most part, given the fact that the event ran on time, I'm pretty good with the way Justin scheduled all that, so I think we're really happy with that. we'll hold off on the rain. I don't know if we can like do a non-rain dance, but we do have a contingency plan in place for the super special. So the mud will not be an issue should there be rain again. And I would keep an eye on Facebook, because just as soon as we get the okay on a few things, I think that you're going to want to make sure that we're in your plans for 2018.
Well, I must say, massive congratulations to you and everyone that's part of the Southern Ohio Forest Rally. You put together not only a successful event, but one that just, you know, everybody just came out to see. Honestly, that's, I think, one of the highlights of 2017 and rallying the U.S. Getting new events is so difficult. As Ian was mentioning, that, you know, the not in my backyard kind of thing, to see a community see the value in rally and welcome it with open arms. I haven't seen that really since here at Oregon Trail, when we decided to divert some of our attention across the border with Oregon Trail at when we started going into Washington State. And the people in Goldendale, Washington, same kind of thing, just welcomed us with open arms, people coming out of everywhere to come out and watch the stages. And it's great to get that community involvement, and it does make a huge difference. Excited to see what you have next for us. You know, the way this is going, you know, with the number of new rallies we've been seeing pop up out of the woodwork or reboots of previous rallies, heck, it seems like that we could end up with every weekend between April and September, there's going to be either a regional or national rally event, right? So that's pretty exciting
stuff.
I mean,
absolutely. You take, I mean, we have three, you know, major sanctioning bodies in the United States now, and you have, I didn't even know the total number of rallies, to be honest with you, off the top of my head, but you have Summer Snowdrift coming up. You have, like you said, the little national ones that are just one day events that, I'm sorry, regional ones. And you could legitimately rally, multiple times a month through the spring and summer. That is for sure. Now, if we can find the rally money tree and we can all, grab a little bit of that, right?
Yeah. I think we'd all like to, shake some bills off that tree, but you know, I think from my standpoint, you know, the more rally, the better. And if nothing else, increase the exposure, the more that we're able to bring this back, bring more of these events on and get more of the, you know, national appeal of it. And I'm not talking, I don't care sanctioning body or anything when it comes to that. The more that we can get these communities involved and people seeing it and it's just out there, I think this just benefits the sport as a whole. And in the end, it benefits everybody, and it's just a good thing. So, you know, Jeremiah, thank you so much for coming on the show. I'd like to thank everyone for listening to the In the Paddock episode 4. This is Mike and Ian. Thanks again to Jeremiah Johnson. Remember, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Please let us know what you think of this podcast and what guests you'd like to have us on the next show. So again, good day, good evening, good night. Depending on wherever or whenever you listen to us, cheers and have a good night, everybody.
Hey, thanks. See ya.
See ya.